Good morning, this is David Bennett, and this is Bitcoin And, a podcast where I try to find the edge effect between the worlds of Bitcoin, gaming, permaculture, podcasting, and education to gain a better understanding of all. Edge effect is a concept from ecology describing a greater diversity of life where the edges of two systems overlap. While species from either system can be found at the edge, it is important to note there are species in the overlap that exist in neither system, and that is what I seek to uncover. So join me in discovering the variety of things being created as Bitcoin rubs up against other systems.
Good morning, everybody. This is your host, David Bennett. This is Bitcoin And, episode number 23, October the 29th, 2018, at a ripe old 8:40 in the morning, Central Daylight Savings Time. Let's get right into vitals. Price of Bitcoin, as everybody knows, has plunged like 1.5% or something like that. So they're getting an average price right now on my read at $6,348. With a high of 6,377 from HitBTC to a low of, looks like 6,268 from GDAX. So the average or the transactions over the last 24 hours for BTC is 237,000. Average transactions per hour is just below 10,000. Pretty low send over the last 24 hours. Of course, it has been the weekend, and that is kind of a deal. 659,000 BTC have been sent in the last 24 hours. Average per hour is 27,500. Average transaction value is down to 2.78 BTC. Median transaction value is relatively stable at 0.32 BTC, or about $200 United States. Block time is pretty much where it should be, 9 minutes and 32 seconds. Blocks over the last 24 hours is 149, and block average per hour is 6. Reward per block is still at 12.5 BTC. Plus 0.09 BTC in fees per block. Over the last 24 hours, 1,863 BTC have been created, with a 13.76 BTC in rewards or in fees. The hash rate is up 5.48%. Excuse me, guys. Still fighting off cold. Hash rate is up 5.48% in the last 24 hours, bringing us back up above 50 exahashes to 51.3 exahashes per second. Across the board, it looks like Ethereum went down below 200. Whoa. 197.51. BCH or Bcash is at 417. Litecoin is at $49. God, everything's getting hammered. Ethereum Classic is $9.09. Bitcoin Gold is $26.49. Dogecoin is still below the 0.004 at $0.0039. I think that'll probably do it for the vitals. Let's move on from here. Today's morning roundup is brought to you by coffee. Shit tons of coffee. First up in my deck is a tweet from Samurai Wallet. If you have recently received a very small amount of BTC in your wallet unexpectedly, you may be the target of a dusting attack designed to de-anonymize you by linking your inputs together. Samurai users can mark this UTXO as do not spend to nip the attack in the bud. And what they're talking about is that it seems clear that there's a type of attack going around, and probably has been. It's probably been around for a while. And people would just either not notice or just not dealt with it. But apparently, if somebody, since anybody can just, if anybody has who has your wallet address can just send you Bitcoin, whether you ask for it, know it's coming, or anything, they can just, you can just receive a donation. But these are really, really, really small amounts as to be, you know, essentially worthless. And apparently what it does is it, once that dusting attack comes in, it and links to, it links your inputs together. And so when you spend like something that you have already owned from that wallet, whoever sent you that dusting attack can now kind of track you through the chain. But see, what I don't understand about that though is if they knew your wallet address in the first place, they could just track you. Why, you know, why send you any kind of BTC, you know, whatsoever? So there's more to this than I know. I'd like to get talk to some of the guys in Samurai Wallet about how this is any different than just being able to watch somebody's wallet account. But still, yeah, it's cool though that the Samurai guys have built into the Samurai Wallet a way that you can mark that attack, and basically you just don't ever include that in any kind of UTXO transaction that you send out. Kind of, like they said, nipping that attack in the bud. So that's cool that they're doing that. Next up in the stack is Bitstamp gets bought, dude. CoinDesk article. Bitstamp confirms sale to gaming group NXC. And yeah, this is a CoinDesk. It's written by Nicolesh Day, and that's this morning. Cryptocurrency exchange Bitstamp has been acquired by NXMH, an investment firm based in Belgium and owned by South Korean conglomerate NXC. So yeah, Bitstamp got bought. That surprised the dickens out of me. Let's see what they're actually, Bitstamp themselves actually has a press release out. Dear Bitstamp customers, today, and this is by the CEO, this is from, and there's no, I have no hope in hell of being able to pronounce this gentleman's name without butchering it severely. NEJC KODRIC. Kodrick seems to be the last name, but I'm probably butchering that. Anyway, CEO of Bitstamp writes to Bitstamp customers. Dear Bitstamp customers, today I am pleased to announce that Bitstamp has been acquired by NXMH, a Belgium-based investment company. No, it's more South Korea-based, but be that as it may. Bitstamp has been regularly approached by suitors for quite some time. The reason why we finally decided to sell the company is a combination of the quality of the buyer, the quality of the offer, and the fact that the industry is at a point where consolidation makes sense. A major factor in agreeing to the sale is that the mission, leadership, and vision of the company remains the same. I want to assure you that Bitstamp remains Bitstamp. We will continue to innovate with the goal of giving our customers the absolute best trading experience. It is business as usual here. We do anticipate that this acquisition will strengthen Bitstamp's positioning for growth, which will provide opportunities to better serve our customers. Customers should not have any concerns about their accounts or changes to the way we operate. Bitstamp has come a long way since we started in a garage with two laptops and 100 euros 7 years ago. Wow, man, that's freaking impressive. We believe this acquisition is the logical next step in Bitstamp's growth as a company, and I look forward to the future with this team. And then he signs off by his name. Okay, so my take on this is that they sold, but yeah, and that's fine. There's only one, and you know it, there's one sentence in here that kind of gives me the willies. The fact that the industry is at a point where consolidation makes sense. I'm not sure consolidation of any part of this industry at any time makes any sense at all. I think continual deconstruction is the way to go. Decentralization, ripping things down, making things smaller, you know, making things more nodal, making things more nimble, light armored, fast moving is the way that this thing needs to go. And consolidation, in from this standpoint, means to me make bigger, heavier, more lumbering, an easier target. That's what this sounds like to me. So while I wish Bitstamp all the best, I don't think the industry is at a point where consolidation makes sense. I completely disagree with that. But it's their business. They can do whatever the hell they want to do with it. Moving on. Jameson Lopp writes, full validation sync of at parity tech 2.1.3 now takes 3.7 days on this machine. I increased cache to 24 gigabytes of RAM, and it peaked at 23 gigabytes. Disk input output is the bottleneck, with over 22 terabyte read and 20 terabyte written in total. Five times longer, only 8 months later. So what he's referring to an earlier tweet of his, where he says, ran an Ethereum comparison on this blazing fast setup, Parity Tech 1.9.3 node with no warp, fast pruning, and 10 gigabyte cache took 1,030 minutes to sync to chain tip. ETH has 57% as many total transactions as BTC, but takes 530% longer to sync. So now, what he's done is he's gone back and he's done this again with when he did it the first time, it was with Parity 1.9.3 node. Now it's at the 2.1.3 node, which is 8 months later, and it's five times longer to do than he did before, and it was already 530% longer to sync than the Bitcoin chain 8 months ago then. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why I stopped giving the vital statistics on the chain length of Ethereum, because I don't think the data that I was getting was in any way, shape, form, or fashion remotely correct. This looks like, see, I think I was saying it was something like 678 gigabytes. It doesn't appear so. It appears to be multiple tens of terabytes. And what I was just saying about consolidation with Bitstamp, I don't think making things bigger, longer, more lumbering is the way to go here. Light armored, fast moving, maneuverable, get in, get out. I did stealth, barely be able to be noticed by anybody who gives it, you know, gives a crap about trying to notice you. This is what you want. And I don't think like 20 terabytes of data is the way to do that. Now, Jameson Lopp, this is actually kind of entered into quite the fight with a guy named with Cyber Hokey. And I think one of the things that Cyber Hokey says is, he starts getting into a fight with the One Vortex. Whereas One Vortex says, Vortex is clearly taking Jameson's side on this, and Andrew comes and says that Andrew, he's replying to Andrew. He says, I can dig consistently benchmarking for analysis. I guess it's the way the information is taken and propagated by others that has touched a nerve. It's not like Ethereum devs are willfully ignoring the issue. The last thing anyone wants is a network dependent on Infura. One Vortex writes back, the last thing anyone wants is a network dependent on Infura, quotes. Really? Because that's exactly what we are seeing. ETH governance via nodes now consists of only a few parties, including Infura and the Ethereum Enterprise Alliance, to which Andrew writes back and says, that's a blatant fallacy. I run a full node. Please don't propagate utter bullshit. Crypto Twitter is devolving already this morning into just a whole bunch of arguments. People just really, nerves are just fried around the board, and a 2% drop in the price to start out the day is not helping helping people very much. So hold on to your asses, people. Try to be good to each other. Peter Todd retweeted, well, it's not, that's not important. Medium Squeeze, at Medium Squeeze, wrote put up a story from our, a Steemit story that was in the web archives. And I think it was like Thinksclamation wrote this. Organized FUD, how the FUD Mafia is plaguing the industry, part four. Well, I'm not going to read it, but it appears, I mean, I've read it. I'm not going to read it here because it looks like Bitfinext got doxxed. And I'm not going to say his name. I'm not going to describe the picture that I'm looking at. And I'm kind of not going to put this one in my line. I don't want to, I just don't, I don't know. I mean, it's interesting to know what's going on here. Seems that he may have, he may have ties with some people that we don't really want him to have ties with. And, like, let's say in Bitfinex might indirectly be connected to the CFTC and is apparently buddies with the lawyer who accepted thousands of dollars of donations on his behalf to defend against a non-existent lawsuit. Now, that's what Peter Todd said when he retweeted Medium Squeeze. He kind of gave a kind of a condensation down on it, of the story. But, yeah, looks like people like, it seems like that Bitfinext has been outed, that his true identity is known, and looks like a whole, it's appeared to me that quite a bit of decent evidence has come out that he is who the doxing says he is. So I'll leave that one for you guys. I've got it in my morning roundup line timeline, but I am going to delete this now. I'm not going to propagate doxing. I kind of can't. I mean, as far as the name and the picture and stuff like that, but it does look like Bitfinex got doxed. So y'all might want to keep an eye on what's going to happen to Bitfinex and how his story changes. I don't know. This is all weird because Whale Report not Whale Reports. People were may have been Whale Reports was inviting him to Bitfinex to defend his points, and it looked like it was going to happen, and then all of a sudden Bitfinex just like went dark, and this kind of all happened around the same time. So I don't know if he backed out because of this story or this story hit because he backed out. I don't know. That's just tinfoil hat conjecture, and I'm not going to entertain it right now. Next up, yeah, it looks like Gab was never decentralized in the first place, which was in the very, very early days. That's what everybody was excited about, because Gab came up as part of the cryptocurrency thing, and it was, oh, it's decentralized, and they'll never shut us down. They'll never shut us down. Well, come to find out, their domain was registered with GoDaddy, and GoDaddy told them what to go do with it. Now, I am neither for nor against Gab at this point. I'm not going to pontificate on whether or not I believe Gab should be shut down. I mean, I guess I will pontificate on that. No, I don't think they should be shut down. I have no idea if it's just nothing but a bunch of, like, everybody's just confused, you know, pointing their fingers at them, saying that they're Nazis and they're right-wingers and they're alt-right, and it's like the same bullshit I hear all the time. And, I mean, when I first found Gab, I got on Gab, I have a Gab account, and you know what happened? I never used it. I'm really trying to get into Mastodon, but that's probably not going to happen until Twitter has a wholesale meltdown, which looks like they might, because apparently I heard that Jack Dorsey is thinking about, or is eventually going to remove the damn like button to help get better discourse on Twitter. And to which I say, that's a terrible idea, getting rid of the like button. I mean, at that point, somebody suggested, when I was reading through the comments, somebody suggested, well, hell, all that's going to happen now is people are just going to retweet what they like, and it's just going to clutter the crap out of everybody's timeline. Nobody is going to know who did what or who said what, because it ain't nothing but a bunch of retweets. So yeah, I don't agree with that one either, Jack. But you know, again, your company, you do what you want. Anyway, so PayPal has banned Gab. Stripe is probably going to ban Gab. Joylent, which is their hosting service, has told them they had 24 hours to get out, and GoDaddy tells them that they got 24 hours to get out. My question is, how was this ever decentralized? How on earth would you be able to state in any way, shape, or form that there's no way that you can be shut down because you're decentralized, when you're not only not decentralized, but being shut down because you're not decentralized? That's how, if you want to shut somebody down, make sure they're centralized. Gab was always centralized, people. It was never, never decentralized. Mastodon, I think, has a better, I think Mastodon's got a much better chance to pull that off than Gab does. I don't think Gab's coming back, and if they do, I think they're crippled beyond compare. So that's going to do it for the morning roundup. Let's get into Marty's Bin. All right. We got Marty's Bin from last Friday. Friday, October the 26th, 2018, issue 348, Bitcoin as a Living Organism. And he takes, first thing up is he takes a screenshot of an excerpt from the article that he's talking about. And I'll just go ahead and read the excerpt. Bitcoin's origin is akin to planting a tree. It wasn't just Satoshi's selection of the species, parentheses code, but the season, parentheses timing, soil, distribution, and gardening, community, that were essential to its success. It had to grow to be strong, mighty, and huge. It had to survive droughts, storms, and predators. Its deep roots had to support the weight of becoming a new world reserve currency. So Marty's Bent is, yesterday afternoon, Dan Held dropped the first of a four-part series of his, in which he will lay out a thorough contextualization of Bitcoin's immaculate conception. In this part, Dan defines Bitcoin species and sets the stage for putting Bitcoin's launch in perspective by taking the condition of the world in 2008 into consideration. One thing I loved about this first part in particular is the introduction of the Latin phrase sanum pecuniam, or sound money, which I have not ever seen until reading Dan's piece. As someone who tortured himself with 4 years of Latin in high school, I'm a sucker for a qual Latin phrase. Thanks for this, Dan. Beyond the very meticulous breakdown of Bitcoin species and the beautiful Latin phrases, the concept of Bitcoin as a living organism has fascinated me for some time now. Dan frames this piece by saying we should view Bitcoin like a tree, something that was planted and can grow strong over time if it is sufficiently nurtured. The protocol's open nature and low barrier to entry makes it so its DNA is copied and replicated across an extremely large geographic surface with no single point of failure. Bitcoin has hired us humans to expend a weird amount of energy and capital to ensure its survival. In return for our dutiful service, we are afforded a sound digital money in return. This symbiotic relationship between flesh and machine grows stronger and more dependent by the block. The meshing of the physical and digital worlds is unfolding before us as we tweet. Things are only going to get weirder from here. Man, I agree. Final thought, my fall wardrobe is struggling right now. Finna ball out at the next J.Crew 40% off sale. Enjoy your weekend, freaks. Yeah, let me say something about the living organism nature of Bitcoin. Marty and a few other people are absolutely correct. Just because it's not made out of tissue or can be cut and then bleed doesn't make Bitcoin any less of an organic creation than an elephant. Just because it's digital, don't mistake that for not being able to follow the rules of biology, ecology, or not rules, but the precedents that we've learned from biological and ecological systems, which are both living systems. I believe Bitcoin's a living system too. And I think the things that are growing up around Bitcoin are absolutely formed an ecology. This is a real thing. Be very, very, very careful of those people who do not respect the power of a living system, because the power of a living system can wipe the face of civilizations off the planet. It's happened before, and it will happen again. And if you don't think Bitcoin's not poised to do the same thing, only this time, not just at a particular geographic area, but a particular notion of human condition, i.e. economies, then you are woefully, woefully, woefully unprepared for what's going to happen in the future. So there's my comment on Marty's Bent. I want to thank Marty Bent for Marty's Bent. And you can find Marty Bent at Marty Bent on Twitter. With that said, let's move on to Bitcoin 101. This segment of Bitcoin 101 comes from CoinDesk, the article of which I got from lop.net, LOPP.net, where he's got a very amazing, long, and useful list of Bitcoin resources. And we're starting at the resources of learning Bitcoin, because this is Bitcoin 101. So this CoinDesk article is entitled "What is Bitcoin?" And it was last updated the 26th of January this year, 2018. So they're still all over this thing. I wish they had put the original date of publication in on this. I think that would have been an interesting bit of data. But let's just get through it. To cut through some of the confusion surrounding Bitcoin, we need to separate it into two components. On the one hand, you have Bitcoin the token, a snippet of code that represents ownership of a digital contract, sort of like a virtual IOU. On the other hand, you have Bitcoin the protocol, a distributed network that maintains a ledger of balances of Bitcoin the token. Both are referred to as Bitcoin. The system enables payments to be sent between users without passing through a central authority such as a bank or payment gateway. It is created and held electronically. Bitcoins aren't printed like dollars or euros. They're produced by computers all around the world using free software. It was the first example of what we today call cryptocurrencies, a growing asset class that shares some characteristics of traditional currencies with verification based on cryptography. Who created it? A pseudonymous software developer going by the name of Satoshi Nakamoto proposed Bitcoin in 2008 as an electronic payment system based on mathematical proof. The idea was to produce a means of exchange independent of any central authority that could be transferred electronically in a secure, verifiable, and immutable way. To this day, no one knows who Satoshi Nakamoto really is. In what ways is it different from traditional currencies? Bitcoin can be used to pay for things electronically. If both parties are willing, in that sense, it's like conventional dollars, euros, or yen, which are also traded digitally. But it differs from fiat digital currencies in several important ways. One, decentralization. Bitcoin's most important characteristic is that it is decentralized. No single institution controls the Bitcoin network. It is maintained by a group of volunteer coders and run by an open network of dedicated computers spread around the world. This attracts individuals and groups that are uncomfortable with the control that banks or government institutions have over their money. Bitcoin solves the double spending problem of electronic currencies, in which digital assets can easily be copied and reused through an ingenious combination of cryptography and economic incentives. In electronic fiat currencies, this function is fulfilled by banks, which gives them control over the traditional system. With Bitcoin, the integrity of the transactions is maintained by a distributed and open network owned by no one. 2. Limited supply. Fiat currencies, dollars, euros, yen, etc., have an unlimited supply. Central banks can issue as many as they want and can attempt to manipulate a currency's value relative to others. Holders of the currency, and especially citizens with little alternative, bear the cost. With Bitcoin, on the other hand, the supply is tightly controlled by the underlying algorithm. A small number of new Bitcoins trickle out every hour and will continue to do so at a diminishing rate until a maximum of 21 million have been reached. This makes Bitcoin more attractive as an asset, in theory. If demand grows and the supply remains the same, the value will increase. Pseudonymity. While senders of traditional electronic payments are usually identified for verification purposes and to comply with anti-money laundering and other legislation, users of Bitcoin, in theory, operate in semi-anonymity. Since there is no central validator, users do not need to identify themselves when sending Bitcoin to another user. When a transaction request is submitted, the protocol checks all previous transactions to confirm that the sender has the necessary Bitcoin as well as the authority to send them. The system does not need to know his or her identity. In practice, each user is identified by the address of his or her wallet. Transactions can, with some effort, be tracked this way. Also, law enforcement has developed methods to identify users if necessary. Furthermore, most exchanges are required by law to perform identity checks on their customers before they are allowed to buy or sell Bitcoin, facilitating another way that Bitcoin usage can be tracked. Since the network is transparent, the progress of a particular transaction is visible to all. This makes Bitcoin not an ideal currency for criminals, terrorists, or money launderers. Four. Bitcoin transactions cannot be reversed, unlike electronic fiat systems. Bitcoin transactions cannot be reversed, unlike electronic fiat transactions. This is because there is no central adjudicator that can say, okay, return the money. If a transaction is recorded on the network, and if more than 1 hour has passed, it is impossible to modify. While this may disquiet some, it does mean that any transaction on the Bitcoin network cannot be tampered with. Five is divisibility. The smallest unit of a Bitcoin is called a Satoshi. It is 100 millionth of a Bitcoin. At today's prices, that's 100th of a cent. This could conceivably enable microtransactions that traditionally electronic money cannot. So there you have it for this first part. There's actually several parts to this, and we'll read the next one tomorrow. And today's Terrible Joke Corner is brought to you by Empty Beer Bottle, otherwise known as Full Beer Bottle on Twitter. This is, I figured I'd keep it, this one, I'd try to find some close to home really bad jokes. But he's just making a reply to Bully Esquire. Always knew you were a horse fan. I'm just a naysayer. I don't even need to know why he's replying that way, but that's the kind of bad joke that I can appreciate. Thank you, Empty Beer Bottle, for the bad joke of the day. It's time for Daily Train Wrecked. So, who's up on the chopping block for today's Daily Train Wrecked? Well, let's just look. Well, it appears the winner today is Maple Change. A small Canadian cryptocurrency exchange claimed to have suffered a bug that allowed hackers to withdraw funds from its exchange. In an announcement on Twitter, Maple Change stated that because we have no more funds to pay anyone back, the exchange has to close down, unfortunately. This includes all of our social media. Hours after the incident and the shutdown of Maple Change's social media accounts, a group of investors found the identity of the CEO of Maple Change, disclosing his name and address on Twitter. after the disclosure, Maple Change's Twitter account was reactivated with the team stating, "We have not disappeared, guys. We simply turned off our accounts temporarily to think this solution through. We cannot refund everyone all of their funds, but we will be opening wallets to whatever we have left so people can, hopefully, withdraw their funds." Sources from Crypto Slate, which I've got the story up here. Yeah. Small Canadian. So Maple Change says they got hacked, closed down their exchange, closed down like their website, closed down like all ability for anybody to get anything out of their funds. Said that, and then come to find out that they closed down all their social media accounts so that they could think about the situation. So you could think, you have an open Twitter account, your computer's not on, but you're not looking at Twitter, but because you have that Twitter account open, you can't think about the situation. So, I mean, this leads to their CEO getting doxxed and his address and name getting released on Twitter. Man, people played with your lives. So, you know, let's revisit rule number one from our good buddy Andreas Antonopoulos. A long time ago, Andreas said, "If it's not your keys, then it's not your Bitcoin." And he is 100% correct. Because when you send your Bitcoin and put it on an exchange or hold it on Coinbase or, you know, some third-party wallet, and you're depending on them to give you the Bitcoin when you request it, that means you don't own the keys to that Bitcoin, and that means that Bitcoin is not your Bitcoin. Don't keep your Bitcoin on exchanges, hot wallets, things like CoinDesk, anything like that. Don't do it, because these guys are going to exit scam your ass. And in this case, you know, the guy got doxxed, but that money's gone. That money's never coming back. So congratulations for Daily Train Wrecked. For Maple Change. Sorry to laugh, and I'm sorry for any of you guys listening to this that had any of your money on Maple Change. Don't ever do it again. Really, don't ever do it again. And that will do it for Daily Train Wrecked. Okay, guys, that's going to do it for me. I will see you guys tomorrow. I'm feeling much better. A little bit more news. Not only is the podcast up on iTunes, but you can now get it on Google Play. And I'm expecting a word back from Stitcher here pretty quickly. So I'm at least on two platforms now. So that's good that they have been able to find any problem, you know, major problems with the podcast to the point that they wouldn't put it up. So that's that. You can follow me at BENND77 on Twitter. I know it's not the most imaginative name or handle in the world, but you know, what are you going to do? I started that thing well before I knew about or got into the Bitcoin space. So that's why I don't have crypto in my name, which I'm actually kind of thankful for. So we'll see you tomorrow. Please go to iTunes and Google Play, share Bitcoin and like it, give it a review. Let me know what I'm doing wrong. I know I'm doing stuff wrong. I know I am. It's okay. I want to work on the stuff that really matters to you guys first. And if I don't hear from you, I can't work on any of it. I don't have a hope in hell to be able to figure out how to change something for the better for you guys. Unless you've got to give me criticism. I can take it. I've been in crypto for a while. I've got a fairly thick skin. Please give me some criticism. Like, share, subscribe, tell all your friends about it, that kind of thing. Let's see if I can, you know, get some even more traction than I've got right now. Thank you for listening. Hope it's been helpful. I'm on the mend, so tomorrow's show should be a little bit better, and we will talk to you then. Y'all have a wonderful day.
This has been Bitcoin and I'm your host, David Bennett. I hope you enjoyed today's episode and hope to see you again real soon. Have a great day.